The bones of 50 windmills rest on Doyle Herrig's property south of the Twin Cities. They're laid out in two orange-tinged wind rows of corroded parts, each row waist-high, a few steps wide, and maybe 50 yards long. Up close, some pieces reveal their identities. There are jumbles of concave blades, gearboxes frozen in rust, spoked wheels like huge ossified spiders.
This particular one here, we ended up getting out of Iowa. It was a spring day. It was cool. It was probably in early May, and as I remember, the wind was blowing about 15 miles an hour. I've thought about that a lot when I tear an old windmill down, is what kind of a day was it when they actually put it up? Maybe it would have been in 1890 or maybe 1902. You wonder if it was in the middle of winter and it was 20 below zero, or if it was 100 degrees that day, or was the wind blowing or not.
Herrig has windmills from all over, California, Oklahoma, Illinois. Someday he plans to bale up these parts, hoist them on flatbed trailers, and move back home to Iowa. He'll get out his wire brush and his WD-40 and open his own museum.
Yeah. Now, this is the sound you may hear of an old windmill. It's quite an eerie sound, and it's strictly the brake bands of the old windmills. And more than one farmer has asked me to either come up and chain the windmill or fix the brake, because it does keep you awake, especially in the summer nights when you have your windows open.
Though windmills have been around since the 7th century, the machine we think of, the American water pumper, the kind you see in Grant Wood paintings, was invented by Daniel Halliday in Connecticut in 1854. It worked well, but it was expensive and needed careful maintenance. By turn of the century, the first problem was solved. You could buy a mass-produced mill with an 8-foot wheel for $25, and thousands of people did, farmers and ranchers who were settling across the Great Plains. But the windmill didn't earn the rank of American icon until the late teens because, says Texas historian T. Lindsey Baker, many of those settlers, for all their grit, had a secret weakness.
Many farmers and ranchers were simply afraid of heights. They were afraid to climb their tower for the weekly lubrication that was necessary in the years before the oil bath windmills. The first successful oil bath mill was introduced about 1912. It was called the Wonder Windmill from the Elgin Windmill Company of Elgin, Illinois. Called the Wonder because it was a wonder you didn't have to climb it every week to grease it.
The windmill's golden age, says Baker, was glorious and short. At its peak, more than 500 manufacturers were working at once. The Air Motor Company, the John Deere of windmills, was building 500 a day in Chicago. But after the boom of the First World War, farm prices crashed.
Farmers entered a depression 8 years before the rest of the country did, with the stock market crash in 29, and times became hard, and fewer windmills were sold. Beginning in 1935, rural electrification from the New Deal began supplanting windmills with electric pumps, providing water for rural dwellers.
By World War II, most of the windmill companies were gone, and most of those remaining converted their factories to produce munitions. Since then, the windmill has become increasingly rare, increasingly quaint, and just lately, increasingly profitable for a small network of windmill specialists who buy, sell, and install old machines.
You know, 5-6 years ago when I was hauling loads of broken down windmills home, you know, people, my neighbors looked at me like I was crazy. You know, for once in my life, I guessed right.
Randy Stubbs is the owner of Big Country Windmills in Maxwell, Nebraska. Business is surging, he says, because of two late 90s trends: the popularity of nostalgia items like windmills and old farm tractors, and suspicions the millennium computer bug may disrupt power supplies.
For the last 5, 6, 7 years, 3 out of 4 easily were being used just for nostalgia, just for looks. But the sales already this year, and this year's off to a tremendous start, has got that to where now 90% of the windmills we've been selling are going to be used to pump water.
California dealer Ellen Sadler has never been busier either. She says her reconditioned mills are as popular with Y2K customers as they were with farmers.
This Y2K thing, needless to say, if and when the power goes off, everybody still needs water. That's a primary need.
What do you think is going to happen to the windmill market if Y2K comes and it's no big deal?
Do we have to talk about that part?
Sadler specializes in old air motors. Air Motor, in fact, is one of the last windmill companies still producing, though from 500 mills per day, it has scaled back to that number per year. A company spokesman said with demand rising, Air Motor is improving its factory and hiring extra help for the first time in decades. They'll be sending out new mills, of course, but it's likely they'll give someone the same pleasure Doyle Herrick gets from his old ones.
There's a lever, as you can see on the leg here, and as you pull the lever out, there's a wire hooked up to it. Now, as we release it, you can see that now the wind will catch the fans and start the wheel in motion. Now, as it goes, these, because they have a lot of joints and sections, as it runs, you should hear a kind of a click-clack or a clackety sound as it's working.
Herrig stands in melting snow, watching his three working windmills answer every shift in the breeze, blades shimmering. He loves them, he says, because they're so old and work so well.
I just enjoy looking at them and watching them. I find it very relaxing to watch them spin. And in a nice summer day when I'm mowing the lawn or whatever, I like to have the windmills running and just glance over and enjoy them.
Windmill collector Doyle Herrig. This is Leif Anger, Minnesota Public Radio.